All right, good morning. I like to start these discussions off by typically reading the forward-looking statement word for word to make sure everybody's got it, but I think this morning I'll change things up and just skip right past it. So American Midstream has had a really interesting 2016. It's been a really transformative year for the entire company, largely starting in the spring with some pretty substantial Gulf of Mexico transactions that we did, which is really a kind of a hidden gem of our portfolio and is really different from some of the other MLPs that you see out there. The second thing, which was really an important transaction for us, which was the combination with JP Energy Partners, which will close here in a very short order. It's really, again, transformative for the company and really expands the asset base. And as a result, I mean, a lot of changes to the balance sheet over the past year, and just really reflecting some fairly attractive performance on a total return perspective. You know, American Midstream is a little bit different than some of the other companies that you'll experience because we have a lot of Gulf of Mexico exposure, and Gulf of Mexico is not all created equal. And our entire portfolio has an attractive fixed fee profile. A lot of companies talk about fixed fee. Some cases it is, some cases it's not. You know, we put our peer benchmarks up here, and you can see we stack up pretty favorably relative to our profile. Following the transaction with JP Energy, will be about 86% fixed fee. I would say, though, that about 10% of that are related to variable rate margins across the propane business, and we'll talk about propane in a moment. But really, when we back that out, we're about 95% pro forma basis. So very, very solid profile and fixed fee basis. Talk a little bit about the transaction with JP Energy. I think as most people know, that the deal is we're getting ready to close. We announced that in October 24th, and it creates what will be about a $2 billion enterprise value midstream partnership, really with assets across all of the major basins, Bakken, Eagle Ford, and also East Texas and, of course, the Permian, as well as a large footprint in the Gulf of Mexico. We also will have what will be the third largest cylinder propane exchange business, the eighth largest propane retail distribution business in the country, and additionally about 7 million barrels of specialty product, refined product, crude oil storage. And you think about 7 million barrels of storage, it's really a tremendous amount. It's great business. And we also have transmission assets along the Gulf Coast, which are really acting as a nice growth platform for us. We have, relative to 2016 guidance, about $185 million in EBITDA on a pro forma basis. When we look into 2017, adjust for synergies, we expect that number to be higher. Here are the assets. Now, You look at this and you say, okay, for a company that's roughly, you know, call it roughly $185 to $200 million in EBITDA, you look at the asset base, say, okay, a lot of diversification there. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Here's what I would say. It's interesting. We look at this and say, if you would have been a player in just the Eagle Ford, or if you were just in East Texas, or you were just gathering processing, as some of our peers are, and you didn't have this diversification, you've had a really tough past 2.5 to 3 years. And we look at this diversification, and yeah, there are a lot of moving pieces for our company, but we look at it and see that there's a lot of stability. There's really no one piece of the business that if something goes wrong, that it's going to put us in trouble. And so, part of our objective here, from a company perspective, when you think about giving investors a total return, part of the value of giving a total return is also return of your capital. And so we look at that and say, you know, it's not just about getting you return on, it's also about return of. That's part of our job, is to help ensure that this portfolio of assets does that for us really across the value chain. So when you look at it following the transaction, this is what the portfolio will look like, heavily concentrated in the Southwest. We do have the propane business, which really extends more up through the Southwest, up to the Great Lakes and middle part of the country. It's a balanced portfolio, and really what we're looking for going forward from a strategic perspective is to look at our individual assets and create what we call molecular density or molecular integration in each part of the value chain of those assets. And really what that's about is putting the molecule through as many individual profit centers as we can before we release that up to the end user or to the transmission pipeline or long-haul gathering connect, whatever it happens to be. We're doing a lot of that in the Gulf of Mexico right now. We have a really substantial position in the deep water shelf. If you heard me talk about this in the Permian presentation, The shelf place in the Gulf of Mexico is really an attractive place to be. Shallow water is not as attractive, and I think a lot of people get us confused with being shallow water players, which we are not. It has very different dynamic profile tied to it. Here's a little bit about the genealogy of how American Midstream got where we are. American Midstream is backed by Arclight Capital, been highly important, highly successful sponsors to us. They have facilitated a substantial amount of the growth that we've experienced since the initial public offering in 2012. Just to kind of put this all in perspective, initial public offering 2012 done with $18.7 million in EBITDA. We move forward less than 5 years later, and we're going to be over the $185 million mark in EBITDA. So we'll have been somewhere near a 10 times increase in the business really over that 5 year time period. We're not done. We have a lot on our plate that we're looking forward to announcing in 2017, and we're just starting to get that going. So we think about the Gulf of Mexico. The one thing I want to spend a minute on is level set about the Gulf of Mexico. This is about 40% of our business. It is the part where we receive substantially all of our questions, and it's a part that is also the least understood. So let me spend a few minutes here, and then we don't have an extended time for this presentation, but what I can do then, we'll open up to questions, but I want to spend a minute on this. Historically, deepwater Gulf of Mexico has been more of a vertical platform. What tends to happen, if you look at the pipeline in red and orange on the far right, we acquired those pipelines from BP in the spring of 2016. Typically what would happen is a large integrated producer would go out by themselves, maybe with another party, solely for their own account, build a pipeline directly to their platform out in the deep water. We're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 60 to 100 miles out potentially, just kind of depends where you are. Go down anywhere between 5 to 10,000 feet of water and maybe down another 5 to 10,000 feet, kind of 15 to 25,000 total depths for well development. They'll build their pipeline specifically for their own volumes. They are not interested in taking any third-party volume. That's not their bailiwick. They don't care. So what happens is then you get one channel to go onshore. In this case, you have Destin Okeanos, which is right here, flows up to Pascagoula Processing Plant, which is Enterprise's processing plant in the Gulf Coast and is the biggest processing plant in the United States, about 1.4 BCF a day of gas throughput. There are four processing plants in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, most of the competitors we have, which would be just a few in the Gulf of Mexico, they all predominantly run vertically. What we did is when we acquired equity interest in Delta House, which is a roughly an $800 million basis platform sitting in the Gulf of Mexico, we had this equity interest in Delta House, which can take about 80,000 barrels a day, if not more, of crude oil, and about 200 million cubic feet a day of natural gas sitting on the state-of-the-art platform out in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. We had that equity interest. Then we had the ability to acquire the lines. So we went vertical then. We got the production gathering. Then we went connected straight up into the Gulf Coast. So that got us onshore. Then we went farther west to take the NGLs across the U.S. over into Bellevue. As we looked at it, we already had the legacy system that we had here called High Point. We already had spurs going out to the deep water, but we weren't doing anything with them in a material way. So what we chose to do then was acquire the Destin and Okeanos systems, and we're able to now flow gas east to west. This is very different. This is what you do onshore. This isn't done offshore. So what we're allowed to do then at this point is flow volumes from what is arguably a 10,000 contiguous square mile development. And to put this development in perspective, what we're looking at here is called the Mississippi Canyon, which is really where you want to be in the deepwater Gulf. And the Mississippi Canyon has reserve potential the size of Oklahoma and Alaska. Okay, so if I told you that we had all of Oklahoma, which included the SCOOP stack, or if I told you we had all of Texas production potential that could flow through our system, about 80% of it would flow through our system, and we had all Permian, you'd get pretty excited about it. Well, it just so happens, nobody knows a lot about the deepwater Gulf. They know a lot about the shallow water, which tends to be smaller producers, smaller oil for service providers, which have had a lot of trouble. Except that's great, except that's not where our assets are, and that's not the development that we're capturing. So all our development's captured out here. And they're doing it at economics well below $40 a barrel. Incremental tie-ins in the Gulf are close to $20 where we are. Okay? That's not the case if you're going to be in shallow water, very different economic profile. So we looked at this and said, why don't we do onshore and do it offshore? Let's just replicate that strategy. So we start going east, west, north, south. We start doing this in April. June 28th, Enterprise has a plant fire at Pascagoula. Takes 1.4 BCF a day of processing offline. Where's the gas go? Just so happens, sometimes you're lucky, just so happens that we were able to flow all those volumes within 24 to 40 hours across our High Point system, over up into Venice, and still flow that product. Okay, so we were able to prove out the economic model. The reason I bring this up is because the valuations to get here are substantially better than anything you'd see onshore. And there are very few competitors. So most of what we were able to do here is a more of an interconnect LinkedIn lever type application, just like what you would see onshore, except we're doing it with offshore assets going east and west as opposed to going north and south. So that's the strategy for Gulf of Mexico. We've done most of what we need to do. We'll deploy a little bit more capital here over the next, call it, year or so. And when we do that, we'll be able to safely say about 80% of the volumes coming out of the eastern Gulf of Mexico deep water will flow through our assets. It doesn't matter where you go, we can flow you through 3 out of the 4 processing plants along the Gulf of Mexico. So if you want connectivity, you'll be flowing through our assets. And if you want surety of production flow, you can flow through our assets. So that's the economic model of this. It's not something that we talk about enough, so we're spending more time trying to educate the marketplace about what we're really trying to accomplish in the Gulf of Mexico, because it's a pretty important piece of the puzzle. Just to give you an example, there's Delta House. Delta House production profile is pretty substantial. When you think about this facility alone, can take about 10 wells and flow 80,000 barrels a day of crude oil and over 200 million cubic feet a day of natural gas. When you think about it relative to a Permian well, that's a ratio of about 1 to 10. So take about 10 Permian wells to equal one of these wells in the Gulf of Mexico. And very different profile. That's why we can have this type of development with just 10 wells. It doesn't take a lot, or 11 wells. It doesn't take a lot to keep this production flowing. What's been happening in the Gulf, particularly out here, the reserve profile has been much more attractive than thought. So the underwriting economics against this project are better. The flow rates have been above plan. And additionally, what we're seeing too is the wells, because the liquid content is so rich, so the gas, just to give you a perspective of this, the gas content is about somewhere between 12 to 13 GPM gas, and that's unheard of onshore. I mean, the most you're going to get onshore is maybe 7 or 8 gallon gas, and you would consider yourself lucky to get that. We're not quite doubling that here in the Gulf of Mexico. So what's happening is it's curtailing the amount of crude production that we're able to push through into the plant. And what ends up happening is then you restrict the flow rates on the wells, and it slows down the rate of decline across the wells. So as opposed to the B factor being hyperbolic, which you would see in typical shale production, it ends up flattening it out and ends up looking like more like a vertical decline curve, which is beneficial because it extends that development life much, much longer across the wells, which means the wells continue to then stack up and you extend the field life much longer. So everything I just said, well, may be somewhat technical, depending on your level of knowledge around those sorts of things. It's very positive. Here's another example of the tie-ins of the well connectivity straight into Delta House. A lot of moving pieces here. I won't belabor the point, but I will say one thing about this, and then we'll open up for questions in a moment. Just to give an example of this, though, one of the larger wells that flows into our Okeanos assets and up on shore is Thunder Horse. So BP's Thunder Horse platform flows into our assets. And just to put this in perspective, if you were just to isolate and say, I want to look at every single basin, if you will, in the U.S. and rank them in North America. Okay, where would Thunder Horse rank on that? Would be number 75. So we would have the 75th biggest find is sitting right on our platform. It just so happens we have about 10 of them. And so just to put all this in perspective, the amount of resource out here is massive. And there's anywhere between $10 to $15 billion a year spent in this area, and that is not a large area. The entire Gulf of Mexico that's operable is about 10,000 square miles. One block here, one block would be one of those kind of small rectangles over there in the far east. One of those blocks, to put it in perspective, is about 3 by 3 mile area. Additionally, we're looking at focusing some of our other development, moving back to onshore to the Permian. This is a silver dollar system that we're acquiring from as part of the GP transaction. You know, this system squares nicely in the Permian. It's got about 125,000 barrels a day of crude oil capacity on it, and we're flowing below that right now. So anything we do from new volume flows are fairly attractive to us, and we're doing at very high rate of return economics. We're looking at extending laterals over and getting more undedicated acreage in the across the system. So again, it's another opportunity for us to continue the development there, and it looks to be very attractive over time. So I think with that, what I'll do is let me touch briefly on the financial strategy, and then we will open up to any questions if there are any. So from a financial profile perspective, you know, we strongly believe that being somewhere below 4x leverage point is important to us. You know, somewhere between the 3.5 to 3.8 tends to be kind of the sweet spot from return of capital of everybody and really maximizing everyone's return potential on that. So we're targeting somewhere in the neighborhood of 3.5 to call it 4x or so from a balance sheet perspective. You know, the transaction with JP Energy really elevates our ability to enhance the balance sheet. Right now we've got $300 million of senior unsecured notes in escrow that we just put out in December. Once we close the transaction, we'll pull those out of escrow, and that'll bolster our liquidity up to about $150 million. We may look to increase that liquidity amount by another $100 million through the year. We also have the opportunity to look at some non-core asset sales. We're not afraid to high-grade the portfolio, and we're looking to high-grade the portfolio. You can do that one of two ways. We can either do that through, really three ways, I guess. You can do it through other corporate transactional and M&A activity. You can do it through asset acquisition activity, which we may do, and bolt onto our existing systems and increase those flows and producer optimization potential. And a third thing you can look to do is non-core asset sales. All three of those for us are on the table, and we look forward to utilizing all of those. And to the extent we create self-equity and look at some non-core assets, we may choose to do that. The last thing I'll say before we open up any questions is, you know, distribution growth. You know, the transaction with JP allows us to resume distribution growth, and so we've targeted 5% DCF growth through 2017 and 2018, and we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks following the close of the transaction. Any questions? Yes, sir. The second tranche was less expensive, is what you mean. It was. So the question was, do we have more tranches of Delta House that we would take down over time, given the fact that the last one we took down was less expensive? We deliberately have not taken down any more. The 6.2% interest that you're referring to was done through third parties. The reason why that was less expensive is because there was no single producer there that had more than a 2% interest, and so we were able to capture better economics on that. We deliberately have not taken more Delta House, and the reason why we have not taken more is not because we don't like the economic profile. We absolutely do. We haven't taken more is because we want to have a balanced mix across the portfolio, and we want to make sure that the investor base understands the Gulf of Mexico, the exposure that we have, and the return potential of it before we take more. Because we do feel like, to finish my thought, we do feel like there's an absolute disconnect between the return potential here and what the marketplace is seeing. Forty percent is from the Gulf of Mexico, specifically. We have the option to take more. We may or may not. I mean, we would like to, provided we feel like we receive the right credit for it. That's a very attractive asset. Any additional questions? All right, well, thank you so much for your interest. I'm available for the rest of the day. Thank you.